open the Subcommittee on General Government, Transportation, and Economic Development. This morning is Thursday, June 9th, 2005. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3493 and a possible work session. House Bill 3493 is relating to statewide lien register. Good morning, Dallas.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As you remember, this was formerly LC 3545, which was approved and introduced as a committee bill.
Right.
There was a number of discussions during some budget hearings with the Department of Revenue and other departments, Secretary of State and the like. This bill was drafted to provide a statewide lien register for state agencies. It would be electronic-based. It's supposed to be a very cost-effective way of recording liens and very accessible to the public.
Terrific. So what we're going to do first off is have a public hearing. We're going to welcome up James Morales. Come on up. And on deck will be Peter from the Secretary of State.
You also have James.
Oh, Jan Coleman. I'm sorry, I didn't see that underneath there. Jan, come on up.
Accompany me here.
So, good morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
You can just introduce yourselves for the record.
Yes, James Morales, Benton County Clerk, on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks.
And I'm Jan Coleman, the Yamhill County Clerk, and also on behalf of the Oregon County Clerks.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good
morning. Mr. Chairman and member of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify here today, and I've provided you with some written testimony. This bill did come up rather quickly. Both Jan and I did provide some written testimony. And one of our first concerns was Jan touched on in her written testimony, in that the Association of County Clerks, and as well as assessors and other offices that are affected, surveyors, these programs that can be affected by...
Can you move the mic just a little bit closer to you there?
Sure.
Perfect. Thank you. We don't want to miss any of your testimony.
Okay, no problem. So where I was is that these county and other state agencies, none of, to my knowledge, were brought into this discussion of how this thing might be, this bill might be drafted, what the effects on the counties and the programs that are supported by the revenues to some extent that are generated by this particular bill. Just helping in the language of the bill, where we do have several concerns about the way the bill is written and how this particular registry might operate if this bill were to pass. And, of course, with the legitimate concern that the actual real property records since the establishment of Oregon as a state have all been located in the county in which the property is located. That's, you want to find real property records, you go to the county recorder's or clerk's office in which that property is located, and that's where you're going to find any liens, deeds, mortgages, other documents that affect the title to that real property. This is a step outside of that 150-some-odd-year practice. And we just think this was not... All the players were not brought to the table, as is common practice or is expected, and from what we've learned through the processes throughout this and previous legislative sessions. The other information is all contained in here. If you have any questions on that, I did show you, put together a quick fiscal impact estimate on the counties and some of that would be page 2 of the testimony that I provided. And you can see that these revenues, much of the revenue comes back to the state on these recorded documents. It comes back to the state assessment and taxation division, that program, and which supports a lot of the property. So, in other words, a lot of these programs, like OLIS, otherwise known as ORMAPs, That's another state program supported by these revenues. They're all dealing with real property. These programs deal with real property. The county clerk's office deals with real property. The Secretary of State's office does not. And that's where this really goes outside of.
We want to make this legislation as inclusive as possible, and so we appreciate you folks for being here. And if we can take House Bill 3493 and sharpen it and make it better or adjust it, we're open to that. So give us specifics in 3493 where you think we need to tweak or make changes.
It's hard. Yeah, I was going to say it's hard for us to do that because you're stealing.
Can you identify yourself?
I'm Jan Coleman, the Amhill County Clerk for the Oregon Association of County Clerks, and Chair Smith and committee. It's difficult for us to do that because you're frankly stealing our revenue. You're stealing revenue from other county offices. It's hard for us to help you refine something that's doing that.
Walk through and explain to us how we're taking the revenue.
Because we record these documents, that's our revenue. And they also have an A&T fee, which is attached to them. It's interesting to me that this money goes back to revenue, that they apply grants to help support the assessor's offices with this fee that attaches to these liens through our departments. There's no mention of that in your bill at all, so are you going to take that away from the county offices too? You're not just hitting the clerks, you're hitting assessors, you're hitting surveyors with the OLIS, you're hitting county big time here. So we have a little problem with helping tweak this when you're, fiscally impacting counties big time here.
So in other words, we oppose the bill, and we'd like to see it go away.
Right.
Is there any form of House Bill 3493 that could work for you folks?
No. Not when you're taking our revenue away. How can we can't justify that to any other clerks?
You could put
Representative Avakian.
The revenue stream is part of it. The other is the substance of what the bill is trying to accomplish. And it would be nice to, I think we hear you loud and clear on the revenue side, but is there value in what the bill is trying to do?
Did you hear me on the real property?
Yes.
Records. That's a real concern. If Rep. Avakian goes in, decides he wants to close a real estate deal, buy or sell, turns out whoever he is buying piece of property from has a lien filed against the person individually. It's in the state lien registry. It's not in the real property records. Well, for instance, they go out and want to close this deal themselves, or and the traditional, or use like an out-of-state bank or something like that. He uses an out-of-state title company. They're not going to know that they're going to have to search the statewide lien registry. They're going to come in and they're going to search the real property records in the county in which this transaction is taking place, like they've done for 150 some odd years in Oregon.
Do you understand that this bill is focused at state agency liens?
But
right.
They
and
put
so
them
the
on property for the owners in the counties in which they live.
They're saying that it attaches to real property. It's saying it's having the same effect as a lien that is recorded in the county clerk lien records and attaches to real property in the same manner.
Okay, I'm a commercial lender. I understand how the process works. What we as a body of the legislature are trying to do is we're trying to work with state agencies who really are, I guess, customers of yours. And we're trying to figure out how do we enhance what we're doing. And if there's a way to not alienate a relationship, we're open to that. But we need your help to help us get where we need to be as well.
What is it not happening right now that you would like to see happen?
Well, I think what I'd encourage you to do is maybe have a conversation with us afterwards, and I'd be more than willing to sit down and walk through that. But for us to go through the entire bill right now is probably not appropriate. So is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Well, we'd like to see this bill get a fair hearing, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And you know, all the players be brought to the table.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, we're now going to call Peter Threckle from the Oregon Secretary of State. Welcome.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Peter Threlkel. I'm the Director of the Corporation Division for the Secretary of State's Office. It's my pleasure to testify before you today on House Bill 3493. I didn't prepare any written testimony, but did work very closely with the State Controller's Division and the Department of Revenue in the drafting of the language in the bill. And we think that we support the bill. We're basically looking at it as a measure for streamlining government operations, through this mechanism, and our understanding was that Department of Revenue is the primary player here in the filing of liens, and will be in the filing of the statewide liens. From conversations with them, that there really wasn't, or their statements were that they didn't have a lot of transactions that they're filing currently, because it's a very labor-intensive process for them to research the property. And by going to this new system, they would be able to streamline their workflow, and they would be able to secure quite a few more outstanding tax debts and possibly increase tax collection and debt collection for state agencies. We're looking at, with the electronic system, we'd have very little impact, or and actually wouldn't have any staff increase to implement the system. So for us, we'd be able to, we've promised the agencies that we'd set the fee by rule at a dollar or less, and the higher the volume in the system, the lower we can set the fees. So with that, if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Avakian, excuse me.
I just want to make sure that I fully understand part of what you were saying. Trying to track in any given situation when somebody has a debt to a state agency and there's a lien on their property, for instance, and we know that there's a debt, we may not know there's a lien, right? So what we're going to do is some type of a search to see whether or not any liens exist that we can attach in order to pay off the debt. So what's the benefit to having this statewide system that's different than our ability now to just go search the counties and find out if there's a lien on any property? What are we getting by this that we don't already have? Or what did I say in that whole stream there that is wrong?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, my understanding is basically the current process is so prohibitive for doing the research, for tracking down individual pieces of property on debtors, that it's not worth the revenue agent and the Department of Revenue or other agencies' time, unless it's a very large, sizable debt.
Okay,
so anything on?
Let me try it this way. There's somebody in Marion County who owes a debt, and we know they owe the debt. Very easy to just call the Marion County clerk or whatever process there is, find out if they own property there and if there's a lien. But what that precludes is maybe they own property in Baker County. So with every debt, you'd need to do 36 searches. And what this register does is it means you do one search. Is that the crux of the whole thing?
Correct. Yeah. You don't in this register, you wouldn't have to know where the property is. You just have to know who the debtor is.
Right. What about the what about, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Please, all of them.
What about the claim that the clerks made that we are stealing their money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vivakian, I'm not really sure how to respond to that. The Secretary of State is not looking at this as a revenue measure. In the fiscal impact, we're predicting that in the next biennium, maybe $75,000 that we would generate in revenues to us.
Do you think perhaps, Representative Vivakian, that's a question we could direct towards Susan Browning to help us address? Because I think you're really more the implementer of agencies who will be working through the Secretary of State.
It was a bold statement, and I want to make sure that anybody who has a hand in this has a chance to respond to it. And certainly, if you want to, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Susan Browning. I'm the Deputy Director with the Department of Revenue. And from the aspect of fees and revenue, Department of Revenue right now pays $16 to record and $16 to release at a minimum. Some counties charge us more than that. Some are $21 to record and $21 to release. So from our viewpoint, there are several reasons why we're really attracted to and really support the statewide lien registry. Our expenses, our budget, are one of them. The cost of recording and release fees right now are prohibitive for us to actually issue liens on a lot of property we'd like to have liens out on. We just don't have the budget to accommodate that. At the expense that Secretary of State's talking about doing a dollar recording and dollar release a transaction, we'll be able to record a lot more liens out there and actually secure debt with debtors, taxpayers, a lot more readily than we do now. So there's several things that make it real attractive to us. It will have an impact on the counties because the $16 to record and $16 release goes to support the counties, and it does support the assessment and taxation function and the ORMAP that we talked about as part of Department of Revenue budget. So this does have that kind of feel of we're taking money out of one pocket and putting money in one pocket and taking it out of the other. But the $16 versus the $1 is a piece of it. The other piece that makes it real attractive to us is what you were talking about, is that it will be electronic database. So it will be very easy for the department to send information out to the database, to the registry, and to correct it and to update it. And it will also be available and accessible for anybody who can use the Internet and has availability through the web. So mortgage lenders, the public, anyone can see what we have out there as far as statewide liens. We think that's important from a couple viewpoints. From compliance aspect of it, if a debtor is trying to refinance, get a car, do any kind of activity through where they need credit, as their lending institution's looking out there at their credit record, they will see that they have a debt with the Department of Revenue, and they will see that pretty easily.
Representative Vivakian.
Well, what you're describing then is something much broader than just a tool for state agencies to collect money for the state. You're talking, it sounds like, a transition in the entire process of tracking liens for the private industry as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vivakian, yes, it will be a change. It'll be a way of pulling all of the liens, the liens for the statewide agencies. You know, we're only talking about statewide agencies together and forming a database that are available for people to access and look at. From our viewpoint, that's attractive because that way there's some expectation perhaps that the lender may have that the taxpayer needs to pay off this debt before they can get their car loan, before they can get their house loan. There's also the piece that, you know, that debt will be out there for people to see, and that creates an expectation too. So we're looking at it from the viewpoint we will be able to secure our place on people's property. We will be able to record a lot more liens than we do currently because of the budget impact. Right now it's prohibitive for us. We've really scaled back on the number of liens that we've recorded because we simply don't have the budget within the department to do it to the level we would like.
Share with me. I'm sorry, do you have a follow-up? Yeah. Share with me. I'm struggling with the issue that was raised by the county, the Oregon Association of County Clerks, in that it's their revenue. I'm looking at this, and I'm open to this discussion, that this is a service that's being provided by the county, but really you're a customer at this point of the county. You're looking to the county to provide a service, and in return you're paying a fee for that service. And you're now looking at taking that, if using a business analogy, in-house and running it in a more cost-effective and efficient way. What am I'm trying to figure out if I'm missing something, and if I am, I want to know what that is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the counties have spoken quite eloquently about how the funding has been used to support various county activities, and the Department of Revenue is a large user of that. We are a large user of the county services recording liens out against property, because that's the mechanism that's in place right now to record in the specific county where the property is. This really is a new tool, a new way of looking
right
at it altogether.
So the county clerks are a service provider, and really the state is a customer that goes to a service provider and says, we're willing to pay this fee for you to conduct this service for us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes.
Okay.
We conduct business with the county in this way. Okay. We need to have the lien recorded. This is how we record the lien.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to follow up on that.
Yeah, thought. Representative Abakian.
And then, but then the second piece to that is, because I would agree completely with what I think the chair is implying, that if we as the customer decide we don't want to go there anymore and we want to set up our own shop in-house, we can do that. What I'm wondering is if there are ramifications beyond that,
right,
that people in the private sector now will go to this registry for information that they would have otherwise gone to the counties to, so that they end up losing some revenue stream from some other source. Is that a factor in any way in this equation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Vakian, I don't see that it's that piece of it's going to affect the county's revenue stream. The revenue piece comes in with the actual recording of the lien, where the, like for instance, Department of Revenue records and puts the information out there. The statewide lien registry will have all the statewide debt. So, yeah, as lenders want to know about the record of the debt, they would need to go to this registry. Peter, do you have any insight on that? Is there something I'm missing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abakian, if I understand the question correctly, I believe that a search of a property transaction, in addition to going to doing a search at the county, you would need to do a search at the Secretary of State through the statewide lien register. And you know, we have talked before that would be an additional step for people that were searching either a specific title or, you know, searching on a specific debtor. And yeah, that would be an additional step that someone would have to take. We would never take a private filing through this system. The only people that are the only agencies that could file are those agencies that have warrant authority, or agencies that went through the other agency collection account at Department of Revenue. So
in from your both of your perspectives, the only revenue stream to the counties that is being affected is the one that is currently provided by the state of Oregon in their transactions with the counties.
Yes, Representative Vakian, Mr. Chair, that's my understanding. The only one would be affected would be what the state agencies are currently paying to the counties. Those agencies that actually have the warrant authority. And primarily it's Department of Revenue.
When they're done testifying, Mr. Chair, I would like to bring up Mr. Morales just for that one, for just this one issue, and see whether or not he agrees with that.
You bet. And we're also going to have Mr. Monroe come up for the Oregon Land Title Association in a moment.
In whichever order you want, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any other thoughts you'd like to share with us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I did want to, I hope I was clear enough, but one of the points the county made was that part of the money that the Department of Revenue pays when it records the liens does actually come back to the department as part of the assessment and taxation funding, where we talked about CAFA funding, if you remember CAFA. part of CAFA is based on this recording and release fees, and the other piece is based on delinquent interest. So as the revenue shrinks in the county, that will be an issue for the funding of the CAFA program and also for the funding of the ORMAP program. So there is that piece I was talking about that's kind of a – the department is paying the money out to the counties to place these liens, and part of that money is coming back into the Department of Revenue in the form of CAFA and ORMAP. So there is that piece of it.
Of course. Dallas.
Yeah. Okay. If I may. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Susan, if this bill were passed and you were able to use this lien registry, I think the plan is it would be online sometime in the next calendar year or something like that. Would that change in funding stream then negatively affect your ability to conduct your business with the budget that you have out there right now?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no, we don't anticipate that it will.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Dallas?
No.
Any other thoughts?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'd ask if you could just stick around for the remaining of the discussion in case we have any other questions. I'm going to actually ask Mr. Monroe to come up. Well, and I want to let you folks do cleanup, if you will, after you hear all the testimony. So come on up.
Okay.
Is that okay?
I thought maybe you already have the question answered.
Is that okay? I think it's fair to have them have the final say on this.
Mr. Chair and I guess member of the committee, for the record, I'm Jack Monroe, speaking this morning on behalf of the Oregon Land Title Association, title companies. Certainly, we can find great sympathy for, I think, the intent of the measure, things like standardization and electronic record keeping and even to one extent or another, centralization. But having said that, and as well-intended, obviously, as the proposal is, in our judgment, the concept is a little bit more complicated than I think we might currently perceive, and we're, I think, still running our analysis out. But let me share with you some thoughts. Certainly from the title company perspective, and I think as Mr. or as Chair Smith would well know, in putting together a title report, we view a whole series of different records in the county where real property, and it's predominantly real property that I'm speaking to here, where the real property is located. And those records include deed records and money judgment records and court records, because court records are important for things like divorces and conservatorships and whatnot, other things that have some impact on real property and things that are of interest to the purchaser of a title policy. And at the most basic level, this straight registry doesn't replace any of those repositories. It simply adds another one that has to be checked by any user, be it a title company or other party. And so, again, it's just another place that we would have to go and anybody else might have to go if they're looking to see whether or not real, or because this deals with personal property, is subject to any kind of lien or cloud. And obviously, as people that have preceded me have suggested, that's contrary to history and contrary to the way most systems, business systems at least, are set up right now. But what are some of the other problems that we might see based on our still being completed evaluation? Warrants now, for example, that are recorded in a city lien record or a county lien record provide notice, obviously, of a real property lien. If a property owner has a similar name to the debtor, a title company has to make sure that it has satisfactory evidence that the persons are different. Now, you know, there probably are not likely to be competing Avakians, but there are a lot of Smiths out there and a lot of Greg Smiths, and clearly it's a simpler process if we're trying to sort out if the debtor's really the Greg Smith we're talking about relative to the real property interest. If we're dealing with one county, it's not very easy if we're dealing with the entire state. So it's going to generate more conflicts because I see nothing in the bill that suggests, for example, that the lien registry will be screened by county. The bill as it's set up now permits filing in the register in both the county and in this new register. So you're going to have duplicate filings, or you might have duplicate filings, and there'll be confusion as to whether or not they're double liens. And so the only way that we, for example, might be able to issue a clean bill or a clean report might be to request satisfactions or releases on both filings. I would also add, I guess just as an aside, that if you examine the organic statutes that give rise to many of these lien rights, and they do this in a couple of different ways, at least based on the two or three that I took a look at, you have very specific statutory requirements right now that suggest that for warrants like this, that they will be recorded in the county lien records. And I see nothing, for example, in this bill that attempts to go back and sort of make the statutes consistent. This seems to, in a statutory sense, just overlay an existing series of processes that are there, whether we're talking about an unemployment insurance lien or any of the other liens that are noted in the statutory sections that are set forth in the measure. I think when we get into the area of both real and personal property liens, we also run into the potential to create some kind of interesting conflicts. And I'm not sure, I've indicated a couple of problems on the real property side. On the personal property side, this measure appears to create a registry that in turn provides notice of a lien on any real property that the party might own or any personal property that the party might own. Now, personal property or real property is probably fairly easy to discover because it's titled. There are deeds for it. Obviously, would have to go out to the location. I don't know if this lien that's created here is intended to create an extraterritorial right, i.e., property that is in Idaho or whatnot, but you might be obtaining a mortgage here. On the personal property side, I don't know how it meshes with the existing UCC filings. I do know, for example, in real property transactions, though, where there's a mortgage, there's both a real property right that's subject to lien and a personal property right because, for example, the right that the grantor has to a stream of payments on a mortgage loan is a personal property right, not a real property right. So, you know, it seems to me there are a number of different elements, long-standing elements, and a number of different elements that sort of need to be sorted out if this measure is not to create some conflict. I think it also, and this is a more technical sense, and certainly I guess subject to correction, but I'm not sure that this measure would speak adequately to indexing and posting requirements. The language in here sort of is real fuzzy. The Secretary of State will provide information in the same manner that applies to financing statements, but as certainly Representative Avakian would know as an attorney, I mean, it's very important in posting liens, both real and personal, that they be stamped as of a particular date and time that postings occur, and also for the sake and use of the repository, that indexing is done in a way that is useful and frankly would be consistent with the way we now access existing databases, because that's the way people are used to accessing and using them. I think with that, I might stop. This obviously has been introduced late and scheduled rapidly. We are still evaluating it, and I would certainly be happy to arrange to have somebody meet with you who is far more familiar with the subtle nuances and the details involved in utilizing these various lien and other public records. Thank you.
Let me ask you a few questions.
You bet.
I appreciate that testimony. How do we protect our title companies when they're doing lien searches if, because of financial limitations, state liens are currently going unrecorded? How do you ensure a perfected title?
Well, Chair Smith, I think the short answer is if it's not filed as a lien, you have not provided notice of the fact that there is an obligation and there effectively isn't one.
Let me restate that.
Okay.
How does the title company share with a creditor that there's a significant outstanding debt that is delinquent, is in a collection mode, is perhaps in the process of being moved upon if the state financially isn't able to record the lien?
Well, I guess Chair Smith, my answer would be pretty much the same. I mean, what we ensure are things that are of record. And so, you know, we are examining all of those existing databases to determine what's of record. Now, if there is an indication that there is a mortgage or whatever it is, some other kind of an encumbrance on a piece of real property, for example, we are then going to be looking for a release to indicate that it's been satisfied. Now, once again, if there's no indication that there's a lien out there, despite the fact there might be a right to a file a lien, then that's not something that's going to show up in a title report.
Let me follow up on that. The title companies I work with on a very, very regular basis do an outstanding job, and they exercise tremendous initiative in looking at all available public records to determine what is out there.
Mm-hmm.
Why would the title companies not just see this as another tool available to them to see if there's an outstanding obligation that they now can assist their customers with in notifying them?
Well, I think they, at the simplest level, as I said in the beginning, for us it's simply another database that has to be checked, another repository that has to be checked. And as we've suggested...
Let me interrupt really quick. Okay. Do you see that as cumbersome?
They tell me that it is, or would be. And I think then the other half of it is, depending upon, and let's assume we smooth out some of these issues about posting and all of that, the other issue would be duplication and the potential problems that they see there, because, as I said, now clearly history suggests that if you want to find out whether a piece of real property has any encumbrances, you go to the county records. That certainly our systems are all set up to pull that information out. As you know, we maintain title plants that by statute, have to have at least 50 years worth of land title records in them, and so we're either electronically pulling those records in many counties, or in the few counties that don't have that capacity, there are actually third party services that periodically draw that information out of the appropriate databases and ends up in our plan.
How much does that cost a title company to pull?
I would have to. That's a question I'll be happy to pose to somebody and see if I can get
what I'd be interested in knowing is the cost of polling versus the cost of...
I mean, we're still going to have to do that because, you know, you're only dealing with state agencies here. State agency, it's not mandatory, so they may or may not be utilizing this repository. So we're still going to have to do everything we do now.
Let me just ask two more questions, and we'll pass to Representative Avakian. You mentioned that there's oftentimes on confusion on who's who in determining who that is. Explain to us or expand on, if you would, on why this statewide lien register is going to, I guess, what's the basis of your statement that the statewide lien register is going to enhance that confusion assist it?
Yeah, I guess the point I'm making is that we can probably, there are probably, I don't know how many Greg Smiths in your county, but there are a whole lot more Greg Smiths in the state. And so if we can't figure out, we know that there are two, it's a lot easier for us to go back through and resolve which one is really the debtor and which one isn't.
How do you do that with the county?
Well, precisely how they go about doing it, I don't know. I mean, I presume they go out I really don't know how they go through what the first step is. It's the first step to go into the phone book and see if and go out and talk to both of them. I don't know precisely how they go about working those out. That's a question I'll be happy to
Please do, because I think the process of determining who's who, whether it's with the county or with the state, is going to be very similar. The last question.
I think it'll be similar, just the magnitude is different.
The last question that I have is you mentioned in your testimony the concern in terms of seniority in a lien filing. Is there anything in House Bill 3493 that you're reading that I'm not that enhances or takes away statutory authority currently provided to the state in filing liens, or is this simply just a register of liens?
I'm not sure that I precisely understand your question. I think it interesting, though. Maybe I'm getting to it here. Section 4, sub 3, you do set up a sort of priority process, but it applies only to personal property. I don't know, for example,
let's read that, though, really quick so we have that on the record. The lien created by the filing of a notice of lien in the statewide lien register is subordinate to any interest in personal property within this state to the same extent that a security agreement perfected by filing under the Uniform Commercial Code would be subordinate to the interest if the security agreement was perfected.
Right.
So tell me what I'm missing there.
Well, I'm not sure, for example, how this works if we've got both real and personal property-related potentially lienable actions that are part of the same transaction.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Is there anyone else who wants to testify? Come on back up. Jan, I don't know if you want to come back up as well.
Okay, James Morales, County Clerk, on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks. Thanks for having me back here.
You bet.
I just wanted to bring up some points from what you were hearing. One thing that I wanted to mention was the filing fee. Right now, the filing fee that we collect that goes to the county is set by statute. That's a $5 recording fee on each page that is recorded. So generally these liens we receive from the state are one page. So that's where we start off with the fee, set by statute. I'm not sure what the state is basing the $1 fee on or what they're charging for UCC filings, which is the system that they're currently or that I believe they've proposed to utilize or somehow change to accommodate this new filing system. But I find it interesting.
Chair, you're talking only at this point about liens that are filed by the state and the $5 fee that the state pays to the county when they do that.
That's the $5 fee. This is the other fee besides the A&T and the ORMAPS or OLIS fee that you've already heard that come back to the state, essentially. So the $5 that the county gets is set by statute. That's Chapter 205. One of the weird things about the bill was we didn't even... Was it proposing to create a chapter, or where was it proposing to be located, amending a certain part of the ORS, as was identified by the gentleman from the Oregon Land Title Association? It's really vague and not clear as to where... What part of the statute is this bill proposing to locate itself in? And so that was another concern. Another concern out of listening to what was just discussed is in the bill it allows for the filing of multiple liens. Later within the same bill allows for the release or satisfaction of a portion of a multiple lien. So if there's multiple liens filed and you're only one party is being satisfied, and then it says that all references to the debt will be eliminated. Well, if all references to the debt will be eliminated, then that satisfaction, the way I read it, will not be part of the record. Which means that the title companies that have issued a report that have found a lien are not going to find the satisfaction. Also, the liens and the satisfactions that are in the county real property records are permanent records. We maintain those forever. If a lien and a satisfaction are filed, a title company is going to find it, and they're going to know that the debt was paid, whether they did the search on the property 25 years ago or 11 years ago or yesterday. They're going to find the lien and they're going to find the satisfaction. If in the instance what we're looking at were the liens that were proposed to go into this database or only have a 10-year life, a title company does a search, finds a lien on a given person for a given property, liens never satisfied or is satisfied, you're not going to find the chain of events. If you come back 11 years later, 12 years later, whatever, and you've got this lien in your title report that was attached at a time that maybe a deal went through and they did a title report on this piece of property, how are they going to locate that satisfaction? You know, that'd be major...
What do you base that statement on?
Well, on the bill, it has a 10-year, it proposes 10-year life cycle on any filed lien. They're not permanent record.
Have you visited with the Secretary of State's office or with the Oregon Department of Revenue on this issue?
No, nobody contacted us. Nobody talked to us at all about this. We're tracking bills, and when a bill pops up that's going to affect our office, we scramble to try and respond. And when this bill was introduced through the Association of Counties, we are connected to what's going on here.
Let me flip that though on you. They didn't notify you. Have you taken steps to notify them?
I did. When I found out way back when this was a legislative concept, I let them know we have concerns about this, and I contacted a gentleman, I don't know if it was the one that testified here, at the Secretary of State's office that, you know, if you guys are going to have this bill or this concept introduced, we have problems with it. And they never came back and said, well, let's talk some more about it or anything like that.
Did you share with them your concerns?
I had... You know, I shared what I could at the time, you know, I'm working on many, many things, not just legislation.
Well, let's do this. Is there anyone else who wants to testify? Okay. Right now, just so you know, Representative Krupp has given an aye vote. I'm prepared to give an aye vote, Representative
for,
Krupp.
For against or for?
For this bill. Here's so what I want to do, though. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to hold this over till Monday. Okay? I'm going to ask that you folks get together with the Department of Revenue and with the Secretary of State's office. Yes.
You carry over the public hearing to Monday or work session?
The work session.
So you've got to close the public hearing.
Okay. Is that okay? Are you okay with that, Representative? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 3493 relating to statewide lien register. Following up on the conversation, I'm going to hold this over till Monday. So that's going to give you 3 days to get together with the Department of Revenue and the Secretary of State and walk through this. What I'm also going to ask you to do, though, is switch seats, if you will, and imagine you're sitting here and you're looking at a cost of $16+ to file a lien versus $1, and you're, again, sitting in this seat and you're saying, I can file 16 liens or one lien. And help us to find a better alternative. Second, imagine you're sitting in this chair here, and you want to make sure that there's complete and open access to creditors who want to make sure that they have the most recent, up-to-date, and accessible information. And so
that's another great point.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to work with those two entities over the next couple days, and then I'm going to, my intention is to take House Bill 3493 and finalize the work session then, but I'm willing and open to your suggestions on this. So I think that's a fair compromise on this, considering right now I do have the votes to pass this, and so I want to work with you on this. So, Representative Bakke, is there anything you want to add to this?
No.
Okay. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3493, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2717. Mr. Rocco. I think that was the first thing to do on that.
Interesting questions raised. What's the best way to handle it?
Mr. Rocco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2717 is a bill relating to the postponement of workers' compensation hearings. I provide you with a copy of the Ann Gross bill, a staff measure summary on that Ann Gross bill from the House Committee on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs, where this bill was passed out unanimously. There is an amendment, the -A5 amendment, which I will discuss briefly. This has been authorized to be included in the bill by the chair of the House Committee on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs, Representative Brown. There's a fiscal impact statement on the -5 amendments, and then I have also provided you with a conceptual amendment that would provide limitation to the agency to implement this bill if you pass this out. Basically, the measure would require that a postponed workers' compensation hearing must be reset to a date no later than 120 days after the date of the postponed hearing. The proposed amendments provide three exceptions to a 60-day notice requirement in the bill for under certain special conditions where you wouldn't necessarily want this postponement to take place. And the fiscal impact, based on the agency's review of their caseload, they estimate about 900 additional hearings per month would need to be rescheduled during the first 10 months after the effective date of the measure, which would be January 1, 2006. And they believe they can do that with four limited duration positions, two administrative law judges, one legal secretary, and one office specialist. And it would require a total expenditure of about $247,600, roughly. The funding for this comes from workers' compensation insurance premium assessments.
Very much. Do you have any folks who want to testify? Come on up. Come on up. You just introduce yourselves for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sean Miller representing Liberty Northwest. LFO staff gave a good summary of the bill. The bill did come 27-17, did come out of the House Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee unanimous. It was approved before that by the Management Labor Advisory Committee. I know Lisa Trussell is here. She was one of the members of the MLAC committee. In the House Business and Labor Committee, it was supported by not only business, labor, but also the Trial Lawyers Association. I think George is here as well today. The A5 amendment was something we needed to add in after it came out. It was discovered by Maureen Bach and John McCullough, the presiding ALJ, that really the substance of that matter is on lines 10 through 13 of the bill dealing with expedited claim services, which was not supposed to be included on that 60-day notice requirement. That was just a technical amendment, and we've already, as was indicated, talked to the chair of the Representative Brown on approving that amendment. Mr. Chair, at this time, I'd just like to turn it over to Chuck Lundeen just to talk about the need for the bill real briefly, and then we'll turn it over for questions. Thank
Perfect.
You.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning. Chair Smith, members of the committee, I'm Chuck Lundeen. I'm chief counsel at Liberty Northwest Insurance. Here to testify in favor of this bill, and we've been concerned about postponements and the length of time it takes to get cases through the workers' comp litigation process for some time, especially the last few years. The statute involved is 656.283. The bill deals with postponed cases, and currently the workers' comp board needs to set a hearing within 90 days of a request for hearing. Hearings are not supposed to be postponed under the statute except in, quote, extraordinary circumstances. And despite that language, for a number of reasons, insufficient case preparation or missing witnesses or the need to raise additional issues, around one-third of all cases are postponed when they are first come up for a hearing in the hearings division. The problem is there's nothing in the statute currently that dictates when a postponed case must be reset for hearing. We talked to the board about this last fall and earlier this year, and there are currently around 500 cases waiting for new hearing dates. And employers and workers, and especially workers, I think, wait from 6 to 12 months for a new hearing date. This means their decision in their lives are kind of in limbo. The decision on these important benefit issues, a denial of benefits, for example, won't be heard we see them 6 to 10 months very frequently. Employers, from their side of the fence, they're posting reserves in case there's a potential liability that will result from acceptance of a claim or part of a claim. And so those resources are taken out of their business or put in reserves and kind of just also kind of held in abeyance when they could be used more productively otherwise. So the bill puts a firm 120-day deadline in the statute for hearings to be reset. That's not to say there couldn't be a second reset, but at least we're going to get these cases back at issue again. The parties will have to push them forward, and frankly, I think this will resolve cases short of hearing. There could be more cases settled, but they're not sitting on a shelf, and just as a matter of human nature, people work on what's most pressing in front of them, so this will put those cases back up. It does exempt certain cases from this 120-day time frame. Those are a couple of categories of cases where the statute deals with multi-party responsibility cases involving a lot of insurers or employers. That's dealt with otherwise a separate procedure in the board. Other cases can be set more expeditiously under the statutory amendments. If by agreement of the parties, they can waive, for example, this 60-day term time frame. That's another part of the bill that we put in place. Previously, there was a 10-day time frame, although the board typically gives more notice than 10 days. You could get a hearing set with 10 days' notice. That's a very short time frame for practitioners to get witnesses together and prepare their cases. And so the bill, in addition to the 120-day time frame, puts a 60-day notice provision in the bill of a hearing so that the parties will have adequate time to prepare and get the case at issue, and presumably will, again, reduce the number of postponements on these short-set hearings.
Chair? Representative Avakian.
I think that's a good piece of testimony. Thank you. I think we understand the substance of the bill pretty well. Because the additional cost in doing this will, in essence, be borne by money that comes from premiums, I'm wondering if you anticipate an increase in premiums if this bill were to pass.
I think the cost is a short-term cost and not a large cost when compared to the overall cost of the workers' comp system. I would anticipate no impact on rates.
And I would assume that there is an increased cost to the industry in working through the current system as it is now when you have to continually rework cases that come up on postponement.
That's exactly right, and I think
because of that, and comment on
yes,
this,
please.
Would the passage of this bill actually have a positive financial impact on the industry and in premiums over time?
We believe it will. I think this is going to cut costs in the system, produce better decisions. Testimony's fresh. You know, a lot of less going back to the doctor, generate further medical information, further testimony down the line. We think it's a good bill for everybody, especially workers, frankly. Let's get these cases moving. This is supposed to be a fast, fair, no-fault system. There's a lot of litigation nonetheless, but we hope this will push this forward.
I would make a motion as soon as you're ready.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Really quick, all we have you up here, Mr. Lundin. I just want you to know how much I appreciate Liberty Northwest leadership on this issue.
Thank you.
And I want you to know how much I appreciate this guy in the stewardship he's taken to get this bill to where it is. I want you to know he's carried this bucket of water up the hill.
And a lot of people.
That's
thank
right.
You.
And so
thank
he's
you,
done
Chair
a very
Smith.
Good job.
And I know it's been
folks.
A kind of a convoluted process, but we really appreciate being here and pushing this forward.
Well, I would share with you, as I look at the expenditure limits, we're a budget committee, and an investment of $247,000 to address this type of issue to me is a small cost with so much greater gain. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else out there that wants to share their thoughts with us? Okay. Seeing none, then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2717 and open a work session on House Bill 2717. Representative Avakian.
I think that we'll be making a couple motions. The first one is that I will move the Dash 5 amendments into House Bill 2717.
Representative Avakian moves the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2717. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so move. Please note that Representative Krupp carried a aye vote on that. Representative Avakian.
We then have the issue of the conceptual amendment, which I will move. Mr. Rocco, help me just for a moment. Are we moving this into House Bill 2717?
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, yes. Since the agency's budget bill has already been passed through the House and the Senate, we would ask you to include another section in the bill at the end of the bill that provides an additional expenditure limitation to the department of the amount in the fiscal impact of $247,562 to carry out the provisions of this act.
Mr. Chair, I move that the conceptual amendment as described by Mr. Rocco right now and in his June 9, 2005 memo to the Special Budget Committee be included in House Bill 2717.
Representative Avakian has made a motion as described. Any discussion? Any dissension? Seeing none, so moved. Count Representative Krupp as an aye vote on that.
And then, Mr. Chair, I will move that House Bill 2717 as amended be approved and moved to the full budget committee.
Thank you. Representative Avakian moves House Bill 2717.
With the due pass recommendation.
With the amendments be passed. My mind just went blank.
I'll try it again.
Try it one more time.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that House Bill 2717 be approved and moved to the full budget committee as amended.
Thank
you. Due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Avakian moves House Bill 2717 as amended to the House Budget Committee with the due pass recommendation. Any objection? Seeing none, so move. Thank you very much on that. Really appreciate that. If you'll be with me on the House floor, I will carry this. Do you folks have a special carrier you want on this? How about if I carry it on in the Budget Committee, and then let's ask Representative Holvey if he'd like to carry it on the floor?
Sure.
Is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.